Welcome to Parents Perspective. I feel so bad for Karen, Callie sighed, sipping her coffee. Yeah, agreed her friend Marge. It was so sad to lose Mike so young. And now, Callie said, shaking her head, she's got Duncan, who just took it so hard. Marge grimaced. Evidently, she can't get him to go back to school either. I can't imagine how I'd deal with that, Callie replied, especially with a 14-year-old. You'd think at that age you could talk it out with him. I don't know, Marge stared off into space. When kids grieve, it's often so different from adults. I remember when my brother-in-law died, my sister sent the kids to a place called a grief camp, I think. Ever heard of something like that? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about bereavement camps for children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with children in this kind of circumstance. Stephanie Handel is a therapist at the Wendt Center for Loss and Healing, specializing in grief and trauma. She provides individual, family, and group counseling. Stephanie serves as director of Camp Forget-Me-Not, Camp Erin, D.C., the Wendt Center's three-day grief camp for children and teens who experienced a loss due to death. She's the coordinator and member of the Wendt Center's Recover Team, which provides early intervention, bereavement support, and crisis intervention at the D.C. Medical Examiner's Office. She has presented, trained, lectured, and published on topics of HIV/AIDS, children, crisis response, traumatic death, 9/11, attachment, trauma, grief, loss, play therapy, and alternative interventions. Stephanie was a 2009 National Association of Social Workers Passionate Social Worker Awardee. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Stephanie.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you both.
Would you clarify what a bereavement camp is?
A bereavement camp at this point operates in nearly every state, and there are some international bereavement camps. A bereavement camp is a non-traditional approach to providing a therapeutic opportunity to grieving children in a safe, supportive environment. Most of the time, it's an outdoor camp. It allows children to explore their grief, have their grief normalized, have their voice valued. It provides them with an opportunity to remember and honor those who have died. And for some kids, it's really their first time in seeing anyone else who has experienced a death like themselves.
What kinds of kids are candidates for this kind of camp?
Each camp does have their certain guidelines. So it is important that if you're looking to send a child to a bereavement camp or a grief camp, that you specifically research the nearest camp to you and you understand their criteria. There's not a simple answer, but we'll start with some basics. Most camps are for children and teens 6 to 16. Some are as young as 5, and some go up to 17 or 18 for the older teens, which that really is a population that falls in between their late adolescence, their in young adults. So there are grief camps that really try and reach that 16, 17, 18-year-old as well. You have to experience a death-related loss for the bereavement camps. Where it varies for camps is how much time has elapsed since the death. Most camps want at least 1 to 2 months since the death. You want to make sure that the child has experienced a funeral, has been able to get through a first month, maybe return to school. So most camps really want at least 1 to 2 months for children. Some specific camps only allow kids within the first year to attend camps. And then there are others that there is no timeline. What's also important as you look at who is a candidate for camp, if it's an overnight camp, and some grief camps are overnights and some are day camps, if your child is a child who's never been away from home, a grief camp might be a really hard first experience of being away from you. And if you consider that with grief in general, separating from a parent can be very difficult. I can absolutely share a story of a 9-year-old whose brother had been killed and had been in treatment. So I'd been seeing mom, I'd been seeing dad, I'd been seeing this boy, and really felt like he was prepared to go to camp. And we completed the application together. And as we got closer to camp, he became more aggressive. His anxiety shot up. He was wetting the bed. And what happened was he was becoming more and more panicked about leaving his mother and father. He needed to know that he could watch over his mother and father, because if he left, potentially something was going to happen to them during that weekend of camp. And he was not, he could just could not even possibly think of the realm of having another person in his family die or be killed. And once we gave him permission to actually not go to camp, and we pulled his application literally a couple of days before camp, you saw the anxiety go down, you saw the bedwetting go down, you saw the demeanor of this child completely change. So you need to take into account if your child can tolerate being away from home. Other considerations that you really want to consider who's a candidate: a child that is emotionally stable at the time, there's not too many changes happening in the family. If a teen or a child is suicidal, camp might not be the best time for them right now until they stabilize. And that's because at bereavement camps, you are exposed to so many other stories, traumatic stories, more what might be considered normative grief stories, and you want to make sure that it's a safe environment on all levels for the young people that come into that environment. So there are some camps, including the camp that I currently run, that we do an assessment prior to camp to really make sure that while they meet the criteria for camp, they're really appropriate and ready to be in an environment that focuses a lot on feelings and emotions and stories and being around other kids and hearing their stories as well.
How can caring adults and parents access information about these camps? How do children get referred to camps?
Firstly, I hope that every adult that is listening to the show today, even if they currently do not feel like they have a child that is appropriate to send to camp, take a look at some of the sites that I'll be discussing today, or look into and understand what exactly a bereavement camp is. Because even if they're not going to refer a child, every bereavement camp utilizes volunteers. And you might be an adult who can be a fantastic volunteer. And at most bereavement camps at this point, they're matching adult volunteers who have experienced a death with a child, because volunteers become models for grief. And this is an opportunity for children to see that I can live and thrive after a death. So please, please hear that. Even if you're not referring a child, perhaps this is your opportunity to give back because of your experience. Most bereavement camps you can find online, and they're run through hospices, they're run through community organizations, and they have applications right online. And I'll talk about a couple of specific sites later on in the program that you can go to. If the website does not provide enough information, there's always a contact, and it could be the camp director, it could be a volunteer coordinator, it could be a clinical director, who either through email or through a phone conversation can answer your specific questions. And I have a number of parents that call up and say, this is what happened, and that begins their first time of even sharing their story. And they'll ask, is this camp appropriate? Or how will it benefit them? And so the conversation serves as a way of also bringing down some of the anxiety for a caregiver about letting their child go attend a camp like this. Referrals come from schools, from hospitals, from doctors, from YMCAs, from synagogues and churches, anywhere that they provide a service to children, referrals can come from them. Case managers, social workers in some of the social welfare departments make sure that they refer children in foster care. So really, referrals can come from anywhere.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on camps for grieving kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child: Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Stephanie Handel about bereavement camps. How would you describe a typical program in a bereavement camp, sort of a day-to-day schedule for a child?
Each day is different, and if it's a week-long bereavement camp, and there's few of them, but there are some, the days look very different because obviously the programs are spread out. Our weekend program, like most bereavement camps, we try and pack in activities. And so the bereavement camp weaves together therapeutic grief groups with traditional activities. Meals are provided, and so campers all eat meals together with volunteers. Usually there are 2 to 3 grief groups per day. And so if you look at a Saturday, those 3 grief groups are spread throughout the day. And usually grief groups are an hour to an hour 15, hour and a half. They're broken down by age groups. And even within the ages, sometimes they're broken down by cause of death. So this past summer, we had a group of 8 to 10-year-olds, all who had experienced a homicide. So that group specifically was made up of children who had experienced a homicide, so that while they were sharing in the group, they really were able to have their experiences validated in a way that made sense to them. But there are other groups that have 10 and 11-year-olds or 12-year-olds. Our adolescents are always together, the 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. And so those grief groups happen throughout the day and focus from the beginning of camp through the end of camp, taking you through like a trajectory of grief, feelings, sharing story, looking at coping strategies, looking at healing, looking at future. And you move through that through the weekend with a memorial that happens at that time as well. Outside of the grief groups, in a traditional normal day, you can have swimming, boating, canoeing, crabbing, arts and crafts, an initiative and confidence course, field games, drumming, drama, yoga. There's so many different activities that happen in the day. So educating youth about the impact of grief on the entire body, body, mind, spirit is only a part of the equation. But then educating them and introducing them to interventions that can help them really understand the impact and feel their body becomes the other part of helping them manage grief once they leave camp. And so that happens through the martial arts and the yoga and the breathing. There are some specific grief camps that, you know, take rocks out to the water, teach kids how to take that deep inhale, connect with their body, and then release the rock. Or I think it's Camp Aaron Baltimore was using plates and having big, deep breath and then throwing that plate against a tree. Think about how powerful it is to inhale the air outside, connect with your body, and release. And it's not always about anger. So I don't want you to think that all kids that go to bereavement camps are these angry kids, but there's so much sadness and fear and confusion and worry that is held within the bodies that all of the activities that happen in a traditional day get incorporated into the activities. There's also carnivals and talent shows and drama workshops that happen and campfires and sing-alongs. For me, it's pretty unbelievable to think that probably at very few camps do you have kids line up at the face painting booth that are asking, you know, I want a big heart and I want you to write my sister's name in it. And then walks around so proud and it's the name of deceased loved ones. And then they parade around, you know, they'll move to the fortune telling and they'll move to the basketball shoot. And they'll be like, look what I have, and point to their face and say, that's my sister. And you think about the intense pride and the ability to feel safe enough just to share it. Because in most communities for kids are keeping their losses more within just the family or close knits of friends. And here there's permission. And kids are learning that it's okay to share. And all of these activities that happen throughout the day continuously give permission and a safety to share the names of loved ones, the stories, the good, the bad, the ugly about loved ones as well. One of the programs that we have in a traditional day is called Open Mic, and it gives campers the opportunity to write. We have a facilitator who asks them to do all different types of writing. And so I brought a few today. I'm going to start with one. This is from an 11-year-old whose father was killed. I remember being with my dad all the time, all of the bad things we left behind. I remember he was a bad cat. I hope he didn't hear that. His heart was bigger than dozens. He was there when nobody wasn't. I remember when he would scream, shout, and yell for his team. Let the Redskins win was his dream. I remember him in the casket, letting everything go away. But now I know that he is with me today and is always here to stay. This one is from a 16-year-old girl whose grandmother had died. I remember being young when nothing went wrong. I remember when I could actually go out and play. I remember loving life every day. I remember the day my life changed. I remember when my pure innocence eased my pain. I remember finding out that life wasn't a game. I remember learning that things don't always go your way. I remember being introduced to the world in the most dangerous way. There is such power behind the work that kids can do at a bereavement camp. And for some kids, they've never been in therapy, they've never been in a school grief group, and this is their first opportunity to really explore their feelings and thoughts. And while each bereavement camp might do things a little bit differently, all of us come from this collective place of really valuing and honoring children's grief, very much believing that it's unique to the individual, clearly believing that children have strong feelings that should be heard and shared. And so that's just one example.
Now, these are written, what you've read to us, did they read them aloud at open mic?
Yes. And open mic is done in small groups. Usually it's done with their grief groups or two grief groups combined. And they're invited to write about something and then each have the opportunity to then share their work. And traditionally with any open mic, you end with the snaps at the end. And so you think also about the building of self-confidence, the risk that it takes to stand in front of others and allow yourself to be vulnerable. So as we look at all of the goals of Grief Camp, it's not just focused on the grief. It's really looking at how to help build the self-esteem of a child who might have become hurt or wounded when a loved one has died. Every bereavement camp has a memorial that's part of their weekend or week-long program. And at our camp, we integrate a couple of different metaphors. One, each of the campers during the weekend creates a boat. And that's at our camp. They create a boat in memory of their loved one, and it gets released. The idea of what it means to let go a little bit. And it doesn't mean letting go of the love. It might be letting go of the pain. It might be letting go of the anger, the sadness. And the memorial happens where we're all together. It's an entire camp. And for us, that means 150 people come together. And each group has a drum, and the drums are used throughout the weekend. And at the time of the memorial, literally on the face of the drum, each camper writes their name as an individual who should be honored as they continue to live each day with their grief. And they also write the name or names of those who have passed before us, those who have died. And each summer, we bring the drums back. And each time the drums get banged, we both honor the living and remember the dead. And so what's really hopeful for children is even though they might not come back again the following year, when the drums are gonged, we are honoring and remembering each time. At the memorial itself, the name of the person who is living is shared aloud, and the name of the person who has died is shared aloud. So it might sound something like this. Jonathan is honoring and remembering his father, Charlie, who died. And each person in the group, their name is shared and their loved one's name is shared. It's an incredibly powerful, powerful moment to hear all of the names of those in camp and to hear how many fathers have died, how many mothers, how many brothers and sisters. And while it can feel intense and sad, think about how powerful it is for kids to look around and to hear and to see, wow, I'm not the only one who has had a daddy die. I'm not the only one who at 10 years old has had a brother to die.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on camps for grieving kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Stephanie Handel about bereavement camps. Since the camp experience seems to be only for a few days or up to a week, can campers ever return to a grief camp?
Most camps only permit campers to come one time. And so that becomes a real instrumental part of considering, is this the right summer for your child? You want to make sure that they're developmentally ready. You want to make certain that they're in a place with their grief that they can do this work. And the reason why campers are only allowed one time, one, if the camp has the policy of happening within the first year, it rules out some kids. But also there are so many children and teens every year who experience a death that this actually allows the opportunity for more and more youth to actually participate in the bereavement camps. It's ironic that kids actually ask this question, because teenagers get on this bus and are so resistant to the idea. There's been arguing and fighting with caregivers almost leading up to the day of the bus. And somehow the application got in. Somehow they got to an assessment. They step to the bus. They don't want to let go of their phone. They don't want to let go of their iPod. And
the rule is that they can't come with any electronics.
At our camp, no electronics, because you really want them to focus on building relationships with other people at camp and really being present for their work instead of tuning out. And then if we fast forward to the end of camp, they want to know if they can stay a week, or if they want to know if they can come back the next year. And I'll say, what happened to your phone? You got to get back to your phone. What do you mean you want to stay longer? Because once in it, you realize how freeing it feels to share, how freeing it feels not to hold on to the intensity all of the time. And so kids want to come back, but for most camps, there's a one-time policy. But again, check with your local camp just to make sure, because I don't want to say that as a generalization for all camps.
Stephanie, what resources on this topic would you suggest for our listeners who we know are going to want to pursue some of these issues further?
There's one book that was created out of East End Hospice called Jeremy Goes to Camp Good Grief. Online, you can go to the Wendt Center for Loss and Healing, Wendt, WENDTCENTER.org. And we have Camp Forget Me Not, Camp Erin, D.C., but also there's a plethora of information on grief and trauma that can be helpful if this camp is not appropriate. The Moyer Foundation, moyerfoundation.org, and that's MOYERFOUNDATION.org. You can locate your nearest Camp Erin. The TAPS program, which is specifically for children who have experienced the death of a parent in the military, www.taps.org. And TAPS stands for the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. There's Comfort Zone camps, which are all over the United States as well. And you can go to www.comfortzonecamp.org to locate a bereavement camp. Please know, check your local hospice. Hospices run bereavement camps in almost every state. This is not only for kids that have had a parent go through that hospice. It is open to children who meet the criteria of having someone die. And lastly, a good resource for locating any camps is the Association for the Accreditation of Camps, and that's www.acacamps.org. It doesn't have all of the camps even that we spoke about today, but you can find different camps that might be appropriate for your child.
Well, this has been obviously an eye-opener and an eye-moistener for all of us. So, Stephanie Handel, thank you so much for coming on Parents Perspective and helping us to understand about bereavement camps for children.
It's been an absolute pleasure to be here with you both today. Thank you. And for me, as I close out in very much honoring all of the kids that I've witnessed go through camp and remembering all of the people that they have brought to camp, remembering and honoring who have died by in many tragic ways, again, I'm going to use our memorial drum.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of a special book for grieving children by pastoral counselor Ben Keckler. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 465 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from Gail Ifshin. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.